And we continue now our examination of the many ways we try to come to terms with death. Tammy Schwerin had no idea that death was so near when she got the news that her son had died from an overdose of heroin. As it turned out, she was in the process of launching her organization's first death fair, a public conversation about our attitudes on the subject. The event is now in its third year, and Tammy Schwerin joins us now to talk about how the fair has helped us all prepare and helped us help educate a community on matters of death. Welcome back, Tammy Schwerin. Good day, everyone.
Thank you.
Tell us more about the Death Fair.
Well, we're in our third year, and we've expanded this year. Friday, November the 2nd, we're having Near Death Story Hour. And this is an evening we thought we would bring people that have had actually, you know, died for like a minute and a half, and they've come back and they could share their experiences. This is people that, you know, have gotten struck by lightning or a car crash, and they're going to share their experiences, which are deeply open and vulnerable. And then that will lead us into the death fair, which is the next day, Saturday, November the 3rd. And this is all in Pittsburgh. And this is a day of celebration and an altar and an art show. And we actually have live vultures and owls and music and workshops and dead talks and poetry and vendors. And so this is our third year.
Tell us how it all came about.
Well, it's a kind of a long story, but our nonprofit Abundance NC was examining death because our associate director's husband was dying of ALS. And we brought a fellow to town called Stephen Jenkinson. He was a hospice nurse, and he's a big rock star from Canada. And people came out of the woodwork and from other states to hear him. And I noticed that this is a huge gap, that people are not addressing death. And we started Death and Cupcakes, and that filled up more than we ever imagined. And then a month or so, my son died. And we had talked about having a death fair, and at that point, I said, I can't do that. And then I said, I have to do that. And my friends and family were like, you are so sad and a weirdo, please do not do this. And I was nervous that like only 5 people would show up, and we had 600 people show up. And it has become our most meaningful and diverse event. And I would say I'm passionate now about death, because death is, you know, a direct relationship to how we live our life. And I find that the more we face death, the more that we get close to it, the better we live our life. And I literally am passionate about it.
Where you have become passionate, certainly over time, and with the success of Death Fair and the conversations, the many conversations that you've generated as a result, we can understand where the passion came from. Where did the I have to come from in that moment?
Yeah, well, I was in shock and denial at that point. It's a deep, you know, it's turning your deep grief, which I understand is a deep love. Grief is related exactly to love, how much you love that loss or that individual. And it was turning that into something positive. And, you know, I could have chosen to fall in a hole and never come out, or do something really good with it. And for my own healing, I had to do it. I literally had to do it.
We are talking with Tammy Schwerin, who is the executive director of Abundance NC. It's a group responsible for the Death Fair. And joining the conversation now is Abundance NC associate director, Hannah Eck. Hannah, welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
You too suffered a loss while helping plan Death Fair. Talk about that and how that helped you plan in the planning process.
Yeah, so last year I had the honor of midwifing 2 deaths, my grandfather's death and my grandmother's death, which is very different than the death that Tammy experienced. Your grandparents are supposed to die, and you're supposed to help. My grandfather had moved to North Carolina from Florida to help take care of my grandmother as she died. They had been divorced since 1972 and were then living in a house together. And he passed before Death Fair, and it was sudden, and it was very much that pipeline of urgent care to emergency room to hospital to bigger hospital to ICU to hospice in 6 days. And it was very clinical. The hospice part was amazing, but it was very clinical. And then afterwards, in planning Death Fair, since it was the second one, I had this we had it down at that point. And so as the event coordinator, I could actually drop in and attend the DEAD Talks and attend the workshops and really deepen my death literacy. And so when I visited my mom and grandma next, we had those hard conversations. Grandma had dementia, but in her moments of lucidity, we could talk about, you know, how do you want to die? What music do you want to have? Do you want to be at home? And having those hard conversations, we pretty much paved the road for an ease of transition for her. So it's drastically different than my grandfather. Grandma died at home in a cabin that her late husband had built with a 1954 Jeep Willy and a winch and a chainsaw. In Appalachia, right on the Tennessee line. And she chose to stop eating and drinking, and it took 11 days. But during that time, we held her, we sang to her. We knew exactly what she wanted. My mom pulled out her dusty guitar out of the closet and played music for her, and we sang her John Denver songs, and we were all holding her when she passed. And afterwards, it was my mother and me and my a family friend, and we washed her body. And we sang the hymnals that her mom used to sing to her as a child.
Contrast that with what it sounds like was your grandfather's death, because again, that was more sudden. He had come back to be the caretaker, and now he's the one in critical care. We weren't expecting that. And certainly we're very proud of our medical system that can do such wonders, and absolutely we don't want to lose anyone. But once you get in that mode, the goal is to save the life, and that becomes the fixation. How different that is when every minute is about, but what if we give them this, and how about that, and try this, and did you do that, and turn them over, didn't they say every half hour, versus sing the hymns because we know we're leaving, let's make her as happy as possible. But that contrast for you must have been, in a way, exquisite and profound.
Oh, most certainly. Yeah, I felt like in the hospital and in hospice, we were micromanaging and instead of experiencing. Like, did the nurse flush the IV with the Dilaudid? If she didn't, let's get her back and make sure that she does that, versus really dropping in and getting the closure. And it wasn't just her death experience, it was our experience of being with her as she was on her way out.
This idea of being with Tammy and dropping in to experience your grief, to not run from it, but to experience your grief is an important part of your life, because it is an expression of love. Not running away from it. Is this something, I'm sure that it was an intellectual idea, I'm sure you got this in your life. What was it like for you to actually experience that and go through it? And I want, if you can, give us a snapshot of a transition, or maybe it's a small movie, of a transition between an intellectual understanding and a profound apprehension of this important principle.
Well, like I said, I was studying it for my neighbor who was dying of ALS, and you know, dropping into it when my son actually died, it was very shocking. But what was awesome about it was our community. So we, you know, my nonprofit focuses on community resilience, and boy, did they show up. So, you know, we had hundreds of people come, and we had a 7-day wake, and we experienced it close up. We did everything ourselves. My husband, our family did nothing, but everyone did everything for us. And you know, committee of 20 people put on a service for 900. And so we faced it front on. And I think, again, when you're in denial, you don't heal. And so as scary as it is, you've got to face it. And the more you can face it, the easier it becomes.
And apparently this is, we've talked about the fact that Americans don't like to have this conversation, but your death fare now in its third year is a suggestion that there is something going on to the contrary. How do people, I mean, why do they come and what's their experience?
Well, this is the exciting part for me. So, that, you know, again, for the first year, people thought I was nuts. And of course I was nuts. But the third year, people are coming, friends are coming from out of town, and people are like, oh, when is death fair? And we're normalizing it. And, you know, it's freaking fun. Our staff meeting, we laugh so much talking about death fair. And, oh, wait, did you get the car crash person to talk? You know, like, we got to have the lightning strike person, you know. And we have earned the right to laugh. I'm not saying this is not awful, but we have earned the right to laugh about things. And it's a part of our life. And my life, you know, for my son has given me like a great gift of the most meaningful life I could ever live at this point. And our family has embraced it. And, you know, we'll do this work for the rest of our lives. And it's now a big mission of mine to bring this to everyone, again, so that it will make everyone's life better.
Well, thank you for sharing that gift with us. Thank you so much for being with us. Tammy Schwerin and Hannah Eck are from Abundance NC, the organization that hosts the yearly Death Fair in Pittsburgh. Death Fair takes place it's going to be in Pittsburgh from noon to 8 this Saturday, November 3rd at the plant in Pittsburgh. And of course, we've got all that information at our website, stateofthings.org. The Near Death Experiences Story Hour takes place Friday, November 2nd. And again, check out our website, stateofthings.org. Thanks so much for being on the
program.
Thank
you so much.
Just ahead, we're going to hear from Southern Constellations Fellows turning rooms into art and Greensboro's Elsewhere Museum. But first, the music of Laura Jane Vincent on The State of Things. Stay with us.
Heavy as blue.